This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The longer this fighting continues, the more devastating its impact is going to be. Hundreds of thousands of children are already severely malnourished and at imminent risk of death if left untreated.
That was United Nations Humanitarian Chief Martin Griffiths speaking about the crisis in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, the BRICS expansion is seen as a challenge to the West. And we hear from young women, African leaders. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The UN's humanitarian chief, Martin Griffiths, warns the war in Sudan is fueling a humanitarian emergency of epic proportions that risks tipping the entire region into a humanitarian catastrophe. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In a statement issued Friday, Griffiths said the conflict, which has ravaged the capital Khartoum and Darfur since April 15, is spreading to Kordofan and is moving toward Al Jazeera State, the breadbasket of Sudan. Jens Laerke is deputy spokesperson for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA. He says Griffiths fears hunger, disease, and displacement could consume the entire country if Sudan's rival warlords continue to put their quest for power above the needs of the Sudanese people.
The longer this fighting continues, the more devastating its impact is going to be. Hundreds of thousands of children are already severely malnourished and at imminent risk of death if left untreated. Millions more will have their education replaced by the devastating traumas of war, becoming a lost generation.
Since violence erupted between the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces in mid-April, the UN Refugee Agency reports more than 3.6 million people have been displaced inside Sudan and nearly 1 million have fled across borders as refugees. The World Health Organization reports 67% of all main hospitals are out of service, and hospitals that remain fully or partially functional risk closing for lack of medical staff, supplies, water, and electricity. WHO spokesperson Tarek Jazarevich says some critical services, including maternal and child health care and treatment of patients with chronic non-communicable diseases, have been discontinued in many areas.
There are reports of communicable diseases and outbreaks, and that will probably worsen with the rainy season. So there are reports of dengue, measles, acute watery diarrhea, but also of severe acute malnutrition. When there is a deterioration of a health system, that affects everything.
OCHA reports millions of civilians need life-saving assistance now, but humanitarians are not able to access people in need because of the insecure environment in which they work. Another problem, it says, is lack of funding. It notes only 26% of the UN's $2.57 billion appeal has been received. UN officials are urging international donors to respond generously to Sudan's outsized humanitarian crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Some analysts say the expansion of the BRICS bloc from 5 to 11 members gives it more economic and political power, but could also create tension with the West. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's minister in the presidency, Kumbudzo Ncaveni, says more than 20 countries applied to join BRICS. Ncaveni told journalists in Johannesburg Thursday night she helped determine the criteria used to select the six new members.
The countries that are willing to achieve multilateralism, the countries that are supportive of the reform of the UN multilateral system is important. It's not reform to be inclusive. It doesn't represent all of us. We are not equal. We are very clear and insistent on the reform of the Security Council so that it can represent the aspirations of the world. It can represent the demographics of the world. You cannot exclude the largest populations of the world from sitting in the National Security Council. It doesn't make sense.
China and Russia currently hold permanent seats on the United Nations Security Council. along with Britain, France, and the United States. Washington has already expressed interest in expanding the permanent seats on the Council, including granting one from Africa. At their annual summit in Johannesburg this week, the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa agreed to admit the six new members in January. They are Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and United Arab Emirates. South Africa's top BRICS official, Anil Sukhlal, told VOA financial clout was also a deciding factor in selecting new members. Saudi Arabia is the world's leading exporter of crude oil. UAE is the fourth largest economy in the Middle East. It's also rich in oil, as is Iran. Egypt is Africa's second largest economy in terms of nominal GDP. Ethiopia is expected to grow into one of the continent's leading economies. Nchaveni says the new BRICS will focus strongly on security issues.
The issues that we considered is not only counter-terrorism, it's cybersecurity, food security, energy security, and climate change impact. We have to work closely with each other because even the nature of cybercrime, the nature of terrorism, it has become global. We wake up one day, we are hosting people in our country that are financing terrorism.
Nchaveni said repeatedly, the addition of new members, now and in the future, does not mean BRICS is becoming an organization to fight the West, which is seen as dominating world markets and some multilateral organizations.
The BRICS is not really a replacement for our bilateral relationships with countries. And we have been clarifying that since forever to say our relationship with the US, with the UK, with France, with the UN itself is not replaced. And BRICS is not a replacement of the United Nations.
Neo Letswalo is a researcher at the African Center for the Constructive Resolution of Disputes. He says five of the new BRICS countries have good relations with the West. The exception is Iran. Nevertheless, he thinks BRICS is headed away from the West, especially with the inclusion of authoritarian Iran.
It's a contested multilateral organization, meaning that it actually wants to detach away from the Western-oriented establishment and institution. So I think that with their position and also with the additional membership, it actually gives them a strong voice. It also gives them a strong cooperation against the well-established international order. You know, it gives them the necessary teeth to actually bite Western imperialists, as they would actually label it.
For Letswalo, the inclusion of powerful Middle Eastern states with China and Russia already there is incontrovertible proof that BRICS wants to counteract Western dominance and, in his words, to disrupt the existing world order. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Early parliamentary results in Zimbabwe showed the ruling party and the main opposition neck and neck today after an election in which President Emmerson Mnangagwa's ZANU-PF party was widely expected to maintain its 43-year grip on power. Presidential results have yet to be announced after Wednesday's vote, which was extended into Thursday in some neighborhoods because of a lack of ballot papers. Mnangagwa, 80, is seeking re-election at a time when the country is grappling with soaring inflation and high unemployment. His main challenger is 45-year-old lawyer and pastor Nelson Chamisa, leader of the Citizens Coalition for Change. Also today, poll observers from a regional Southern African bloc, SADC, said certain aspects of Zimbabwe's tense presidential and legislative elections did not conform to democratic principles. The Southern Africa Development Community noted the cancellation of opposition rallies, biased state media, and alleged voter intimidation among some of the issues that sullied the election. The observers deployed by the 16-nation group, however, said the period running to the election and the voting phases were peaceful and calm. And you can find the latest on the election on voaafrica.com. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Members of the Mandela Washington Fellowship through the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, came to the United States to study in universities, network in the public and private sectors, and inspire change in their home communities. For some of the women in the 2023 YALI program, the chance to build their careers in the United States was life-changing. VOA's Anthony Labruto has more.
700 members of the 2023 Washington Mandela Fellowship through the Young African Leaders Initiative gathered in Washington before heading home to Africa. Now that their six-week leadership training has concluded, they can take what they've learned and apply it in their communities. For women such as Christian Lopez Miguel, the YALI opportunity to come to the U.S. provided the forum for collaboration that she couldn't have had in her home country, Angola.
One of the things that we gain as well is the cultural exchange and the opportunity to work with other young African leaders.
Miguel was able to work with YALI fellows from all over the continent to bring solutions to the people who most need them.
One of the things that we forgot sometimes to do is when we are bringing a solution for a community, we just bring the solution ready for them. And this is not a good way to start. You need to involve people that are living there, people that are facing that problem every day. So almost of the solutions they have with them, they just need help from someone that is more capacitated or have more resource to apply that solutions and make that solutions sustainable.
Continuing her work now as both a YALI ambassador and alumna, Miguel wants to inspire future female YALI fellows through the YALI's Africa for Her initiative.
And you can have sessions that the sessions are to empower women and girls, not only in the entrepreneur area, but in political, economical, and even with the skills, soft skills that can help you to achieve your goals and to disrupt the discrimination and the gender inequality.
Tlamelo Cindy Melamo, another fellow from Botswana, also valued that collaboration.
YALI is a very great platform, particularly for women, because it gives you an opportunity to learn a whole lot more and also meet other young African leaders, female leaders, and see that you're not the only one who's trying to make a difference in your community. And it's also a great platform because it empowers you as a woman to continue and to try your level best to continue creating change.
For Memory Mdebwe, a children's rights advocate and a fellow with the program, said the opportunities to challenge traditional norms on the continent has given her a refreshing perspective on her career.
It is very important for me as a woman to be in a program like YALI because it has helped me to connect with other young women that are also doing tremendous things in their communities. I think for the longest time we were coming from a community where what was traditionally expected of women and girls was to maybe marry and those kind of things. So to just interact with other women that have been able to break that kind of barrier has been really impactful for me as a person. It has given me more fuel, but also it has made me to understand some of the challenges that we can collectively deal with as young people as we also try to deal with the issues that are happening in our community.
The Young African Leaders Initiative, run by the U.S. State Department, will welcome its 10th cohort next year, with application decisions being reviewed later this year. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump was booked at the Fulton County, Georgia jail Thursday on 41 charges that he and 18 co-defendants participated in schemes to meddle in the state's 2020 presidential election results. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Jepson has more.
The first ever arrest photograph of a former U.S. president. Taken as Donald Trump was processed on charges alleging he participated in a criminal conspiracy to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in the key swing state of Georgia. Trump told reporters later Thursday that his opponents were trying to derail his presidential nomination bid.
What they're doing is election interference. They're trying to interfere with an election. There's never been anything like it in our country before.
Trump, who is the current frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, is not under arrest and can still campaign. Elaine Kamark is a fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution.
Now, this could get quite messy, as you can quite imagine, especially because the trials are the schedule of the trials is the same as the schedule of the election.
Trump faces 91 criminal charges across four separate cases, including allegations of campaign fraud in New York, mishandling of classified documents in Florida, and charges in a Washington court that he encouraged the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol. But some analysts say Georgia's charges carry the most weight. Todd Belt is director of the School of Political Management at the George Washington University.
This is the most serious one for him politically. And the reason I say that is because they have him on tape talking about how he wanted to change the outcome of the election.
At a prayer rally in Georgia this week, members of faith communities pushed back against calls to remove District Attorney Fannie Willis from her position because she is prosecuting Trump.
District Attorney Willis has demonstrated courage, integrity, an unyielding commitment to upholding the principles of justice that lie at the heart of our legal system. Her efforts to investigate and prosecute former President Donald Trump send a powerful message that accountability knows no bounds.
Outside the courthouse Thursday, dozens of the former president's supporters criticized the charges. Trump supporter Anton Williams.
Our government, literally right before everyone's face, weaponize the justice system. This is crazy.
The president's former lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who is among the 18 co-defendants accused of a criminal conspiracy, said the charges were unjust.
This case is a fight for our way of life. This indictment is a travesty.
But analysts say the large number of co-defendants could be a key factor in proving the case against Trump.
When you bring in multiple defendants on a criminal case, many of them may decide that they want to make a deal with one of the prosecutors to lessen their own penalty that they would receive in the case. And by doing so, they would have to agree with the prosecutor to provide evidence that the prosecutor doesn't already have.
Willis has asked the court to begin the trial for Trump and his co-defendants on October 23rd of this year. Trump opposed the trial date in a filing Thursday afternoon. Catherine Jepson, VOA News.
The West Africa bloc, ECOWAS, today told Niger's coup leaders it is not too late to reconsider their position as they wrangle over a return to civilian rule. Generals who ousted President Mohamed Bazoum on July 26th have called for a three-year transition period, while the Economic Community of West African States demands the immediate return to constitutional order. With delegations shuttling to Niamey, ECOWAS says negotiations remain its priority while defense chiefs prepare a standby force for a possible mission to restore democracy. Niger's junta has warned against any intervention and yesterday agreed with the military leaders in neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso to let their troops into its territory in case of an ECOWAS invasion. Also today, dozens of African media figures on Today called on the Niger's new military government to respect press freedoms. The French news agency AFP says Reporters Without Borders organized the appeal of about 80 people, including media owners in Francophone Africa. Their statement asked the military to respect the right to information, to pluralism and media independence, and to ensure the safety of journalists. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early August, the State Department hosted the inaugural Secretary's Global Anti-Racism Champions Award. The award recognizes individuals around the world for their efforts advancing racial equity and combating racism, racial and ethnic discrimination, and xenophobia. Secretary of State Antony Blinken commended the efforts of six civil leaders, including indigenous lawyer Carrie Guajajara from Brazil, for her efforts promoting indigenous people's rights, combating gender-based violence, and advocating for the conservation of the Brazilian rainforest. Oswaldo Bilbao Lobaton founded an organization to promote the rights and visibility of Afro-Peruvians. Oswaldo's work has brought together black communities in Peru, and his efforts mentoring young Afro-Peruvian leaders ensure his work will continue into the next generation. Victorina Luca advocates for Moldova's Roma people, who have faced generations of abuse, stigma, and harassment. Victorina also organized the delivery of food and other supplies to more than 3,000 Ukrainian Roma refugees after Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. She also founded a Roma language news station to offer education, entertainment, and empowerment for Roma across Moldova and throughout the diaspora. Sadia Mazba's own experience being discriminated as a black person living in Tunisia inspired her to found Menempti, meaning My Dream, to advance the rights of black Tunisians, which helped Tunisia become the first Arab country to criminalize racial discrimination. Saraswati Nepali has spent more than 20 years standing up for the rights of Dalits, or the so-called untouchable caste in Nepal. She has successfully campaigned to allow Dalits to worship at popular Hindu temples and to abolish bonded labor in western Nepal, which has trapped Dalit families for generations. Finally, Rani Yanyan is a tribal leader and women's rights activist in Bangladesh, where communities like hers face mass displacement, land grabs, and violence from the government. She has advocated for climate resiliency and gender equality, the political participation of indigenous women, and mentored youth activists on diversity and social inclusion, despite facing immense discrimination and even violence herself. The world is lucky to have you as such incredibly committed citizens, dedicating your lives to advancing the rights and lives of others, Secretary Blinken told the recipients. And what I want to tell you today is that as you continue the work you're doing, this transformative work, the United States will stand very proudly by your side.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.